And welcome to this month's edition of the Zeitgeist Tapes. My name's Emma Burnell. I'm a political journalist, communications consultant, and very excitingly, playwright and director, which is both exciting and terrifying. I'm joined, as always, by Professor Stephen Fielding of Nottingham University. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Emma, and congratulations on all those things.
I know.
I don't know how you fit in all of those things into one whole life, frankly.
What do they call it? A portmanteau career.
Right. Well, you can call it what you like.
It's the most extraordinary month because I've agreed to direct the play and tickets went on sale this week. I've got myself a lovely new part-time job working for the Fabian Society that I'm very, very excited about. And I've just landed a contract doing some really, really fun public relations / sort of consultancy work with my own local authority.
Wow, isn't that good? And so later on today...
It's not famine in my world, but it's definitely feast at the moment and I'm enjoying every second of it.
Well, yeah, good. Later on today, I may have a sleep. So, congratulations.
We've sort of been thinking about what to cover, sort of post-local elections, 1 year of Keir, all of this kind of thing. And Steve very cleverly suggested that we cover David Hare's play, The Absence of War. For those of you who haven't read or seen this play, we're just going to give you a quick introduction here, which is the trailer for the 2015 version with the lovely, Rhys Dinsdale?
It is Rhys Dinsdale. And I've got an interesting fact after we hear the clip about that.
Well, let's hear the clip and then we can have your interesting fact.
The point is, you see, life's much less tricky for the Tories. They have the advantage over us. They simply ask, what school did he go to? What bank did he work in? Is he a QC? They use all the people who sell each other houses. They give jobs to the people who sell them their shares. Hell, they have whole troops of infantry who wear the same uniforms and gather round flags. Rock-solid infantry who all understand. They all understand the point of it all is one thing, one objective, which everyone knows and is loyal to. Money's a simple master in that way. But our master is different. And causes more argument. Our master is justice. And no two people agree what that is.
Yeah, so that's the basics of The Absence of War. But first, before we get into it, Steve, you have an interesting fact.
It's a very interesting fact. Rhys Dinsdale, who plays George Jones, who is a central figure, the Labour leader, who's a central figure in the play.
And who's just heard.
Which you've just heard, yes. In the original production of 1993, John Thorpe played George Jones. And the fascinating fact is that in the 1980s, Channel 4 had a sitcom in which John Thorpe and Rhys Dinsdale starred as the father and the son called Home to Roost.
Good Lord. Well, there you go. It's such a small thespian world.
Yes.
Brilliant.
But yeah, that clip kind of, that's David Hare's kind of way of looking at the differences between the Conservatives and the Labour Party, which is, you know, some people might disagree with the Conservatives being just motivated by money. It seems a bit simplistic. But I think that point about justice and so many, you know, people disagree about it and they're having, you know, arguments about it, that's as true today as it was then and as it was, you know, many years before 1993.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been reading the play, obviously, in advance of this, and what was so interesting was how many of the conversations people were having in 1983 are almost exactly the same as the conversations we have now, not necessarily about policy. Some of the policy discussions have moved on. But about politicking and how politics works or doesn't work, or how the Labour Party does or doesn't work, it's absolutely just so circular that these are the things that were key in 1993. Mm. And now, yeah, the Labour Party no longer stands for anything distinctive, says the marketing expert. I And you just think, oh my God, that's every blog I've written for the last four months.
Another interesting thing, but more interesting than the previous interesting thing that I said, is that David Hare was given access to strategy meetings by Neil Kinnock. I mean, he was given special access. So he sat in on meetings. And so some of the things that are kind of discussed, or you've got characters discussing, are versions of reality. I mean, and in fact, some of the stuff, when there's a discussion about, oh, no, you can't call it equality. We've got to call it fairness. They were real discussions that had preceded.
And still do to this day. I mean, that distinction is something that actually divides Labour people quite a lot.
So he's got a lot of insight. I mean, it's almost documentary. I mean, George Jones isn't Neil Kinnock, but it's David Hare's rendition of Kinnock's dilemma, I think, of a socialist who becomes leader, partly because he is a radical, and then has to stop being a radical. At least that's what he's told by his advisors. This is what the George Jones character is definitely told. If he wants to win the next election, he has to basically stop being George Jones if George Jones is to be prime minister.
What I found really interesting, obviously we did the West Wing last month, and I think we touched on the whole let Bartlet be Bartlet and how much of an effect that's had on the British Labour Party. And of course, that's what happens towards the end of this play. George Jones is told to stop being the focus group, stuffed shirt, and to really let loose and be himself. But he, and to let George Jones be George Jones, but he can't do it. And I found that an interesting choice on David Hare's part, because it makes neither one case nor the other. You know, if he could have done it, would that have won the election? Or if, as his advisor Oliver says, if he just stuck with the safe stuffed shirt approach, would that have won the election? And was it falling between those two stools that actually ended up with him losing?
David Hare's a playwright. He's not a political strategist himself. So is he having his cake?
Yeah.
And eating it. Is he, you know, being able to...
I mean, you feel a little bit like that, I have to admit.
Well, you know, like I say, he's a playwright, so he can do what he likes, I suppose. But yes,
absolutely.
He has.
And as a playwright, I very much endorse that message.
yes. So, but as a political kind of strategy, you're absolutely right. There's a fundamental ambiguity in all of that. And, you know, I've name dropping. I've interviewed Sir Dave on a couple of occasions and been trying, not necessarily about this play, but just to talk about other things and just trying to get him to say, well, what you're trying to say in this piece of thing? And he says, well, no, I'm not there to tell people anything. I'm here to pose questions, and if people can get what they want from it. And in a way, if that's a true reflection of his approach, then there are, you know, ways, there are different interpretations of this play. But I think he's basically saying, you know, George Jones, the leader, like Neil Kinnock, the leader, well, basically by 1992, he should have been true to himself. You know, and had Labour been true to itself, then maybe it would have won in 1992, because you know, the play was written in 93, but he observed what was going on in 92. So it's kind of cast, it's written in the shadow of Labour's fourth general election defeat in a row, right? When experts, I remember Anthony King, because I didn't really take to Anthony King too much, because he was a very right-wing figure. But he was the John Curtis of his day. And I remember him looking po-faced and sucking in his lips like a maiden aunt, which is what he would kind of do. And essentially he was saying after 1982, you know, Britain's become a one-party state. You know, I mean, Britain is just like, you know, Japan, as Japan was then. You know, Labour's screwed. So, I mean, as you were saying right at the start, Emma, a lot of the things around this time are very familiar to us today, which is one reason why, you know, I thought it'd be a good idea just to talk about it. I mean, Labour's apparently permanent dilemma of reconciling what it is, what it feels itself to be, with what it has to do to get those swines the voters or enough of them to vote for the party. And the kind of, and in George Jones, he embodied that dilemma. I think he wanted us to see George Jones as the Labour Party, as the, you know, ultimate dilemma of the Labour Party at that time, but forever, possibly.
That's really, really true. And I think it's interesting, isn't it? In some ways, Keir Starmer has the same kind of story of that, coming from a very working class background, as George Jones has, and then coming into and being part of and emblematic of a very middle class world. With George Jones, it's his love of the theatre that's seen by some posher than him as put on, as an air that he's, you know, but clearly isn't. It's something he genuinely feels and loves. With Keir Starmer, it's obviously Sir Keir Starmer. You know, he went to Buckingham Palace, he got the knighthood, and is therefore, no matter how much he's Keir Rodney from a working class background, he's still seen as, you know, this establishment middle class guy. And so, whereas if you were New Labour, you might spin that as a story of social mobility. And say, well, if I can do it, everyone should be able to do it. And what Labour Party is about is creating the conditions for everyone to be able to do it. Whereas if you were Corbynite, they would very much see this as a betrayal of working class values and a moving away from and rejection of working class and working class values, despite Corbyn himself not being working class. So I think it's, again, I think that he's a really useful, interesting, central character in that way, because although they don't talk about it much, the class discussion is, it runs through it.
Yeah, I mean, in a way that I think that what Hare might have picked up on was things said about Kinnock himself, because although, I mean, in the play, George Jones didn't go to university, let alone go to Oxbridge. Whereas Neil Kinnock, he went to Cardiff and he got a 2-2. And there were always...
Nothing wrong with a Desmond. It shows you had a bloody good 3 years. That's all I'm saying.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. But that was used against him to basically say he wasn't up to it. And the character George Jones, is constantly being told, you know, you're not really up to it, George. You know, oh, George, read this, remember this, you know, because we don't trust you to think for yourself in terms of policy. And so I think there were things and insecurities in that character that actually were from Neil Kinnock. And interestingly, I mean, this is something which, you know, these days people go, you know, if anybody says anything about John Smith, it's what a wonderful man he was, how tragic his early death was, which of course it was. Many people, you know, when they think of John Smith, if they do think of John Smith at all nowadays, it's what a great principal guy he was, how sad it was that he, you know, died. He could have been Prime Minister, he would have been Prime Minister had he lived. No New Labour, perfect world, Labour could have won without Tony Blair, and this is all in retrospect. In the play, the John Smith character, there is a character who is constantly undermining the Neil Kinnock character, his Shadow Chancellor, funnily enough, which is what John Smith was, who was clearly briefing against George Jones, and in the end succeeds him, just like John Smith did. That's John Smith. You know, that's a version of John Smith who was doing all those things before 1992. And that contributed to Kinnock's own insecurities and George Jones's. So you know, it's, in a way, the play is a commentary on the Kinnock, the last knockings of the Kinnock period. I mean, it does broaden things out to be about, you know, leadership, the problems of it, you know, how constrained you have to be, and also almost the impossible job it is to be the Labour leader in opposition. So yes, that's one reason why we thought it would be a good idea to talk about it, because Keir Starmer has been under the cosh relatively recently in light of the May election results, and had a bit of a wobbly weekend. Things didn't go quite to plan. You know, reshuffles and demotions that became promotions and this and that and the other, allegedly. So we thought it would be quite an interesting thing. And coincidentally, I don't think we've directly referred to it, but a few days ago, Keir Starmer was interviewed by Piers Morgan on his, was it Lifetime's awful...
I'm sorry. Lifetime.
Life stories, oh God. Yes, where he normally interviews soap opera stars and fading reality TV stars to talk about himself. Because in this play, George Jones is presented by David Hare as being inauthentic, but inauthentic for political reasons. He stops being himself in order to become more appealing to the voters. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I mean, 48%, there's a character who's the survey person who says, well, 48% of the population think you're boring. Yeah. But that was a deliberate strategy on the part of his handlers to stop him seemingly radical, interestingly radical. With Keir Starmer, he's kind of got a similar problem, but for different reasons. I mean, I don't think people think he's inauthentic. They just don't know who the heck he is. I mean, some people think he's inauthentic, like Owen Jones and the Corbynites, who, you know, say he's just a kind of Blairite. But most people just say, well, Keir Starmer, as Piers Morgan said, you know, you come across as a bit robotic. Who's a real Keir Starmer? Who's the authentic Keir Starmer? And I felt, you know, he came across quite well, but I wasn't really the audience that he was trying to pitch himself to. I mean,
I've been quite critical about the leadership over the last few months, and not the direction of the Labour Party as such, but more the lack of the direction of the Labour Party.
Yeah.
I thought the life stories was very good, actually. I thought he came across as really personable, very witty, quick-witted. You know, he had quick responses to things. Whether it will change minds, who knows? It's more about the clips that will go around Facebook than the couple of million people who actually watched it on the night. I thought one of the interesting things in the play is that the advisors very much get it in the neck. I mean, I don't know how much has changed in Whitehall. In Westminster, because the advisors, all of the people who are supposed to have these different jobs, they don't seem to do the jobs that I think go with their job titles.
Well, maybe that was David Hare trying to mix up, you know, trying to prevent people saying, so you mean Charles Clark? I don't know.
They very much get sort of told that it's their fault that they've constrained George. And of course, Keir Starmer's often comes in for a lot of stick, and, you know,
yes,
his operation that's the problem. And a lot of journalists have sort of made that point, you know, fairly or unfairly. And of course, these aren't generally people who can answer back. They can in a play, they can't in real life.
Yes.
But it is, of course, ultimately the head of HR, i.e. the leader, who has to carry the can. And George Jones is responsible for the staffing of his office. And that point is made to him, you know, by his soon-to-be... by his advisor when talking about why he won't be horrible to his successor. And he says, because he's going to be my successor. Peter Party over the individualism, and they make the point in the play in 1993, the Tories get rid of their failing leaders and we don't. And I thought, God, you know, the more things change.
Yes, yeah, that bit doesn't stand up so well. But then again, we're living through, in some instances, very unusual times and a very different Conservative Party now, aren't we?
Well, no, I mean, I was thinking that that's exactly what the Conservatives do. I mean, they took their time with Theresa May, mainly so she could get the blame for everything being so awful during the Brexit process.
Well, we'll see how long they hang on to Boris Johnson when things, if things ever turn out too bad for him. But no, there's certain things in the play that, as you said, could be about the Labour Party today. The Keir Starmer George Jones comparison isn't perfect, but yeah, there's a sense of the importance of authenticity. I mean, for George Jones, at least according to David Hare, was if he'd been authentic to his true socialist self, you know, maybe, I mean, this is a question, like, he's having his cake and eat it, maybe Labour might have won, I don't know. And with Keir Starmer, I mean, there is that question that, who is Keir Starmer? I mean, did he present himself as he really was during the course of the leadership campaign, or as, you know, some Corbynites sort of alleged, you know, it was all a con job to get the votes. So questions of authenticity are central, at least to Labour politics, and probably now more, I mean, the perception of authenticity, you know, if you, it's a bit like, I think it was Peter Cook, or was it David Frost, or somebody clever in the 60s said, or it could have been even Bob Monkhouse, sincerity, if you can fake that, you're onto a winner, right? But like authenticity, if you can make people believe that you're being true to yourself, then Bob's your uncle, you know, might not win you the election, but it, you know, people will think of you in a much more positive way. So that, and in a way, the play is all about authenticity, but political authenticity. You know, George Jones should have been consistent in his socialism, whereas today, you know, with Keir Starmer, it'd be about being personally authentic, and the politics has been slightly nudged to one side. But certainly in the Piers Morgan show, I thought he came across, you know, as authentic. Whether that was a performance, which I do suspect it wasn't, or it was, it was something which people might see and go, that person seems to be more, not the robot that I imagine him to be.
Yeah, it was, and that humanising element. And I think for David Hare and George Jones, that's why he's got the theatre. It's that humanising shortcut.
Yeah.
It does well for the class conversation, but it also gives him a hinterland.
Which, again, that's one reason why Kinnock got Hare into the position he was, because Kinnock is a big lover of theatre, apparently. So, and I can only imagine, I mean, I think I know, but when he went to see the play, he wasn't best pleased, Neil Kinnock. You can imagine how you wouldn't be if you were Neil Kinnock and you saw, you thought, is that a version of me? Oh, really? I bet he wanted to hit him. You know, that'd be a Kinnock response, give him a punch.
Yeah, maybe he should get him on the football field, because apparently it's okay to attack each other physically there.
Yes. That was something that Keir Starmer said with Piers Morgan about what he would do to Boris Johnson if he was on the football pitch. Yes. I haven't heard that criticised, but I can see why it might be criticised now.
I suspect. I think it's absolutely fabulous. It's only sort of people like me who hate all that macho shite.
Yeah, I saw it as banter, which of course is a terrible thing anyway.
It's banter, yeah. Definitely.
It's banter, yes. Yeah. So there are interesting parallels with Keir Starmer's position from the play. I mean, we showed the clip from the 2015 touring production. I would think it's worth putting on again. Definitely while things are as they are.
And as we discussed before the podcast, Rhys Dinsdale has just died in Emmerdale, so he's available.
Where there's death, there's opportunity. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's good. It's got a few little sort of early 90s little moments, but you could quite easily, if you wanted to, you could get rid of those.
One of the things that I found fascinating, and this is not really a political point, but because I'm having to think about it at the moment, there's an awful lot of stage direction in this, which is very unfashionable now. Writers are not supposed to put in anything like this much stage direction. You're supposed to leave it to the director and the actors to find.
Find their place. They have to find their own place.
Yeah.
Well,
which is of course why I'm also directing my play now.
Yeah. You want total? Have you done the theme tune? Are you starring in it?
I've managed, as a frustrated actress, I can't believe I've managed to write a play at my age where the female part is too old for me.
Yes. Well, you know. Well, I mean, if you put us, I think it's, weren't you saying with all that moisturiser that you.
I do moisturise, like Keir Starmer, I moisturise on a daily basis.
Yes. So we had to read it. Unfortunately, this is a bit of a gripe because I was lent a copy of the BBC TV production of the play, which I remember being very good. And John Thor was George Jones.
Mm.
I remember it being very good. And well, we read the play because we couldn't watch that because it's by some
only odd... available in the United States. What's that? Yes. That?
And you have to pay.
That big BBC?
I know that seems like cultural appropriation,
right?
To me. How dare the Americans take part of our British culture?
Absolutely.
And then deny it to ourselves? That's awful. So it'd be great if BBC Four could put it on again. If very timely.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, all of the big executives at BBC Four listen to this podcast, so I'm sure they'll be rushing straight to the schedules now.
And it can't be that expensive. Or maybe it is. I'm sure Sir Dave could forego any royalties in order to publicise his work further. But I think it is one of his better ones. I mean, in the past, I think we've looked at a couple of Sir Dave's stuff and TV work, and we've been a bit sniffy. I would try to make up for that and say that actually think The Absence of War is probably one of his best, and by that I mean it is one of the best contemporary plays about politics. Even 1993 is still contemporary, about.
I mean, I thought it was very good and very engaging and very gripping. I did feel that he wimped out with the, would he have won if he'd been able to be authentic?
Yeah, but then that leaves us to debate it, doesn't it?
Well, so, absolutely. Maybe that's what great art really is, and I'm signposting things far too much when I'm doing.
Well, I couldn't possibly say, but I understand it's going to be at the Camden Fringe, your play.
It is.
Isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, it's August the 12th, 13th and 14th at the Lion and Unicorn. Tickets are now available.
Are they still available?
There's one or two left. One or two.
Book early, but the listener is encouraged to book early, though.
Really, yeah.
Each year. Good.
No, they are going like hotcakes.
Good, because I don't know what hot cake is, because if cakes are normally cold,
cake just out of the oven is amazing. It's all warm and moist and delicious. It's well worth having a hot cake if you
want. Oh, right, okay. Well,
and brownies in particular, they're still really gooey.
Are brownies a cake?
I think they're...
They're not a biscuit.
Not over this. But yeah, no, tickets are going very well. Yeah, it's a slightly terrifying prospect that it's actually real and it's happening. But I would love to see any of our listeners come up and introduce yourselves. I'll be the one sitting in the corner looking terrified.
Well, I'm sure you could, well, we could find a way for you to put a link up somewhere.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So I think have we done The Absence of War?
I think we have created war where there was absence.
Yes. So if and when they put it on again, definitely go and see it. I think it'd be definitely worth our listeners' time. And if you can get access to the John Thor TV version, I would definitely recommend that as well.
Definitely. Lovely. Brilliant. Well, thank you so much as always, Steve. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We really appreciate it. If you have any feedback, do get in touch with us. We're at ZT Podcast on Twitter. That's probably the best place. And do rate and review us on iTunes or wherever you're listening to this.
Please rate and review.
Please. So just leaves me to say thank you to Lord Stuart Wood of Anfield for our theme tune. And this has been a political